This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Her Vantage, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. How much do you pay attention to your health? According to the HPV Information Center, cervical cancer ranks as the third leading cause of female cancer in Malaysia. We dive in with Professor Dr. Wu Yinling, a gynecologist, clinical doctor and scientist on women's health and what it's like for a woman to work in medicine. She's also been nominated the Malaysian Women's Weekly's Great Women of Our Time Awards. Professor, very good to be speaking to you. Before we get into the kind of work that you do and a lot of interesting information about HPV, tell us about your journey towards where you started and how, where you are today.
Thanks for having me, Frida. So I started off actually when it's an unusual story. I never wanted to do medicine, you know. After my A-levels, I thought I'll do law, like just most of my friends. Then my dad said, I've enough funding now to send you overseas to do medicine. And that was when Mrs. Bhupalan, the headmistress of Methodist College, made a few phone calls for me and said, look, I've got this young person here who wants to do medicine. So off I went to Dublin, Trinity College, and that's where I did my medical degree. And I think what has happened since is that my life has been punctuated by little opportunities. So during my undergraduate years, what was very striking were the gynecologists that we were training under. What struck me most was that they were very empathetic. They cared for their patients, and that attracted me to that specialty. Mm. And so even at my undergraduate years, I knew that I wanted to do gynecology. In fact, I knew I wanted to do gyne-oncology, which is looking after patients with cancer. I can attribute this to one person during my training. This was a female gynecologist who sat with, you know, anyone ranging from the person on the street, living on the street, and to some VIPs, and she would treat them exactly the same. And that really showed me how one person can impact the rest of the impact the lives of individuals. And so since then, I sort of looked for opportunities to develop as a gynecologist that looked after patients with cancer.
So a gynecologist-oncologist.
Yes.
So it's amazing how one role model can actually change your life completely.
I think many individuals, for example, many individuals whom you've met may have that same story. I think these people you come across impact your life. And then, you know, as I went along in my training, then certain people who have qualities that inspire, you sort of approach them and say, what can I do? How do I take this forward? If you were my position now, what can I do to achieve that? And that's been the situation. And I think as a young sort of enthusiastic student, going up to a professor might seem quite daunting. Thick skin lah, huh? I want to do this. And then I think if you can follow through what you say you want to do, I think the doors opened up.
Yeah. And it's amazing how, I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about how teachers have really impacted, you know, my life, you know, the positive teacher, you know, so very clear, the positive teachers and how a word of encouragement, a word of something, and then that just sort of, you know, gets you on the right path. Now, so you were a star student with the highest score in the world for your professional exams, all the way up to achieving a generous grant to pursue your PhD in Cambridge. So to what or who do you attribute achievements? Is it all these people you met along the way?
Yeah, I don't think there's one person. I think the attitude I had was, I'll just give my best shot. Be prepared. I mean, even when I go for an interview, you know, I tell my junior doctors this. Every opportunity you have is an opportunity where you can bring things further. Your preparedness will take you further. And I think I've tried my best at at an interview, an application. And of course, with every sort of success, you have many failures that does not show here. So I've had lots of rejections before I had that successful grant. And you see, where have I gone wrong and how I can move forward? So then you have to have a debriefing with your supervisor, you know, where how can I improve on what I've done? I can't do any better.
Is there a memorable one where you've, you know, where it didn't happen and then that lesson learned and how that took you further?
I think the exams, for example, so most of the all the obstetrician and gynecologists have to go through this professional exams in the UK. I felt that I didn't do very well in the written exam and I was all a bit down and I, you know, then I went back to work. And I met this Australian doctor who was visiting UK at that point in time. She said, look, you know, self-pity won't get you anywhere. And I said, she said, you have to try for this, the next bit, which is your oral exam. And so I said, I've not booked myself for any courses because I didn't think I would get through this. She said, come over to my place and we will practice every day. So as I hesitated and struggled with my English language, she says, Yinling, the time you've hesitated answering or what you're going to do with this patient, she's already collapsed. Come on, buck up. So these are the people I've met that have helped me. Lots of, you know, individuals who have helped me along the way.
Okay, and you've only come back to Malaysia 6 years ago.
That's right.
What brought you back?
Family. Mm-hmm. My parents are here. I still live with them. And the work that I can do here, the fine weather,
okay,
the good food, this has always been my home. And even when I was overseas, I came back to do my electives here. I think Malaysia is my home. I consider it my home.
And you feel that there's a lot of work to do here in terms of your field.
Yeah, there is a lot of work to be done. I think we just have to look for opportunities within the expertise that's available, the funding that's available, and the people around you. There's always opportunities to improve things. So since coming back here, then I've worked with like-minded individuals to see how we can take research that will be Malaysian-centric.
Mm.
We may not be able to compete with countries which has lots of resources, but there are still opportunities to do things within the Malaysian setting for our Malaysian women.
Mm, okay, so you are both a clinical doctor and a scientist. So how do you juggle both of this? Because you're still meeting your patients,
yes,
and then you're doing all this research. How do you manage all this?
I would say that I'm not completely an expert in a jack of all trades, so to speak. But I do think that I bring value to both areas. So I know how scientists feel when they speak to clinicians. Clinicians are always so busy running around and they have this air about them and they may not be able to communicate with the scientists very well. And a scientist may spend quite a lot of time looking at a particular molecule and not necessarily knowing how it will bridge how it will impact patients. So, for example, in my area of work, dealing with human papillomavirus and cervix cancers, there are many, many groups working on therapy, vaccines, DNA vaccines to cure cervical cancer. Whereas the flip side is we already have very effective methods to prevent. We have very effective methods to detect early cancers, which we can cure.
Hmm.
So, but we still can't persuade women to have these done or go for this simple
measure. You're looking
measures
at one of them.
So if I have later on when I have cancer and I offer this sort of DNA vaccine for cure, my question is, would women take it up?
Mm.
And how many percentage would actually take it up? Mm. So should we invest in researching in that area or should we pour our efforts and share our ideas on how we can encourage women to take up methods that are already available? Mm. How do we message it? How do we deal with the unknown fears of women? Is it merely just because we are too busy or we are actually fearful or we don't see any relevance of a pap test in our lives?
Okay. I'm sure you're going to be sharing a lot of these things a little later. I want to talk about the facts and misconceptions. But before that, why did you veer into HPV?
opportunity once
okay.
again.
Right.
So after, when I was doing my clinical training, my supervisor said, okay, go speak to this person who's a fertility specialist, a fertility professor. So I go see this person and he talks to me in science language that I cannot understand. He says, I want you to study the clathrin endocytosis. I said, this guy is speaking Greek. I don't understand.
You don't understand.
So he says, go read this paper and that paper. I said, I thought to myself, I don't want to do this. Then he says, okay, go meet this other professor who deals with human papilloma virus and the prevention of cervical cancer. So off along, I went to meet Professor Margaret Stanley, and she spoke to me. She made science understandable. She said, look, we have a disease here, and this is what we need to understand, the immune system, how we deal with it. Then it struck a chord. I said, I understand what I need to do. Mm. I think I'm prepared to spend my a few years away from my clinical work, which I really enjoy, and take some risk in terms of exiting from my paid job into applying for grants. Mm. So that's how I got into the area of HPV research. Okay. And it was all quite timely because it came along the times where the vaccine was then rolled out. Mm. So it was the right time, right person, right place.
Okay, so there are some interesting facts and misconceptions and encouraging news in this space. We'll just talk about that in a moment. I'm here with Professor Dr. Wu Yinling from University Malaya Medical Center and also Malaysian Women's Weekly's Great Women of Our Time Awards recipient. You're listening to Her Vantage, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
This is Her Vantage. Good afternoon, Frida Liu here. This is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Professor Dr. Wu Yinling from University Malaya Medical Center. She's a gynecologist, oncologist, and also a recipient of the Malaysian Women's Weekly's Great Women of Our Time Awards. Now, we were talking about HPV and you know how the whole idea about getting a pap smear and all that. And there are a lot of fears. I have a fear of doing this because ever since my son was born, I had to do it and it's just haunted me. But there's some encouraging news in this area.
Yes.
Maybe we'll address some of the misconceptions first.
Yeah. So every time, I think when you speak to a layperson, you hear the word virus, you get very nervous. How did I contract this? And what does it mean? Does it have any implications? Does it affect me relationally? Will I get very sick with it? But in fact, human papilloma virus is a very common virus.
Mm.
No one gets worked up over a wart on their finger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's human papilloma virus as well. But there are some high-risk viruses that are associated with cancers.
Mm.
So if someone asked me, how common is human papilloma virus? And I would say, we know now that 4 out of 5 women in their lifetime will have the virus at some stage in their lives.
Okay.
So I think we need to change that misconception that it's something that only a few people have.
Mm.
It is actually, in fact, a virus that most people will contract in their lifetime.
Okay.
And our immune system does very well in dealing with it or suppressing it. And so there are situations where women in their lifetime at some stage will have an abnormal pap smear. And if you leave it long enough, they can actually resolve if it's an early abnormal stage.
Mm.
It's when it develops to something further, it causes pre-malignant or pre-cancer changes in the cervix, that we can do a very simple 10-minute treatment to deal with it before it becomes cancerous. That's the general rule. But of course, there's a small pocket for some women who develop cancer. They develop it at a very rapid rate. And I have met patients who've had cancer and said, I just had my pap smear last year. Why did I get cancer? So a pap smear is not without its faults. It is not 100%. Like any screening method, it's not 100%. It depends on the person who takes it. So if you imagine, we've talked about this, you know, you have a pap smear, it means putting in a speculum, which is a very uncomfortable thing to have done. So as a human, as a doctor, or if someone who's not familiar with doing a pap smear, you put in a speculum, the patient sort of
freezes
or shouts or kicks, you quickly put in the brush, take the smear, and then you exit, done. You may not actually visualize the cervix very well. And if a person will benefit from having a pap smear done, if it's done every 3 years or so, because the development of cancer takes so long that you hope that at some point in time, the pap smear will detect or can detect the abnormality. But now, science have paved the way in such a way that we know that there's a more sensitive tool now to detect abnormality in the cervix, which is HPV DNA testing.
Okay.
So what it means is that this is the ideal situation. What it means is that a woman can actually do a swab in the privacy of their own home, send the swab to a doctor, to a hospital, or to a healthcare facility, get it tested, and if there's any abnormality or a high risk virus that's detected, then they have another test done.
Okay.
And that only is about 5 to 7%. So if 100 women does that, only 5 to 7 will ever need to see a gynecologist to have something else done.
And this is available now?
This is available now. It's not rolled out completely. It's not standard care, but it's going to be standard care in Australia, for example. Mm. And many countries are moving towards that method. But it involves a lot of planning because it involves educating the woman. You imagine, you know, we've always been brought up, and over the years, we know that we have to go to a doctor, have a speculum, do a pap test, and suddenly you tell the woman, you just need to do a swab. So that needs to be coordinated.
Okay.
We need to educate our doctors. We need to change infrastructure, how things are done. We need to find the facilities to do all these tests, because suddenly if every single woman in Malaysia says, I will do this test, do we have enough laboratories to cope with that? So I'll
be your first guinea pig.
It's not a guinea pig, actually. It's proven.
Okay.
It's done. We actually did a little study in University of Malaya. So we actually went up to women and gave them a little swab. Mm. It's like a Q-tip.
Yeah.
And they just, we teach them how to do it. And in Malaysia, I think what's different is that we are generally uncomfortable using, say, tampons or using suppositories. So it needs a bit of time in educating someone to even do a self-swab.
Mm.
So that needs to be dealt with sensitively. And Malaysian women are, in general, very open to the idea of swabbing themselves if they are taught correctly.
Okay, so in terms of the percentage of women in Malaysia getting cervical cancer, what are the figures around it?
I mean it's not high compared to, say, breast cancer. Mm. But the thing we have to remember is that it's completely avoidable.
Mm.
And what's different is that these cancers are common among the the younger women in their productive age, in their 40s, in their 50s, where they still have young children.
Mm.
You are not ready. You don't think that you would have cancer. But in Malaysia, about 6 get diagnosed every day.
Mm.
And we have about 2,000 over cases per year.
Okay.
So it's not big in terms of a bigger picture.
Right.
But if you think about it, it's completely avoidable.
So the 2,000 need not even be there in the first place.
Yes, and that's the cancer. And when you talk about the pre-cancer changes, women having to have hysterectomies because they have pre-cancer changes, women having to have small surgeries, we can actually do things to prevent that.
Mm. Okay, so and there are also vaccines available?
Correct. Okay. So in Malaysia, Malaysia should be very proud of this. When I go for conferences, you're the first country whereby you offer your 13-year-old girls free vaccination. And I think we should be extremely proud of this. We recently received a recognition in an Asia-Pacific meeting to say that we have done this well. So the ministry says that more than 90% of our 13-year-old school-going children have been vaccinated against cervical cancer. Although we won't see the effects of it in the next 10 years or so, that is something if we maintain, we will not have to deal with all these deaths in 10 to 20 years. Then the question is, what happens to those of us who have missed the vaccine? I mean, the vaccine can be given up to the age of 45.
Okay.
Right? But, you know, if you've not, even after you've received the vaccine, you're still advised to go for
checks,
for regular checks. Yeah. Okay. So the message is, have regular checks.
Okay, and you were saying that the goal is to get to three swaps in your lifetime.
That's possible. So if we know from statistics in Malaysia that about 5 to 7% will carry the HPV virus. Now, from the time you have the virus to the time you develop cervical cancer takes 15 years.
Wow.
15 years. So that's a long time.
Mm.
So the whole idea about this screening method is that if we detect the virus, let's have a look, see whether it's caused any harm, and let's deal with it.
Mm.
And so if you have something that takes 15 years, if you have one test at 30, all clear, then you can rest assured that then you can do it, say, at 35 or 40, all clear. Then you go. So you don't need to frequently see a doctor or a gynecologist for uncomfortable screening tests.
Mm, okay. So what still gets you excited about the work you do? There's so much that is still undone.
Yeah. I have two things that I do. I enjoy my clinical work a lot. I enjoy meeting patients. I do think it's a very privileged job. I listen to biographies nearly on a daily basis, especially when they're going through tough times.
Mm.
That's when you see the best and the worst that comes out of humanitarianism coming into action. And the science as well interests me. So I get up every morning, or most mornings at least, and I am excited about going to work. There are lots of things to be done. If I can, and I think it can be done in Malaysia, and this is what we are hoping to embark on, is that we want to encourage women of the right age group to have their cervix screened or tested or checked. And then I think we are in a real position to really reduce the risk of developing cervical cancer in Malaysia. We have the tools. We just need to get women out of their homes or their seats or their offices to have them checked.
Right. Congratulations again on receiving the Malaysian Women's Weekly's Great Women of Our Time Awards. And it's been a real pleasure and, you know, eye-opening for me to have been speaking to you. I've been speaking to Professor Dr. Wu Yin Ling from University Malaya Medical Centre. This is Her Vantage, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.